another day and more questions, more chaos. I have been in contact with all of the parties involved in this situation at the jail one way or the other, and feel like I know their positions pretty well. It is 6:06 on the 10th, but I don't reckon this the whole situation is going to work itself out easily or quickly, but you've got two sides. You've got the sheriff, Kiki Vigil, on one side, and he is pushing for change for his department at the county commission, and he's sniffing around for corruption. On the county side, you've got a board of commissioners, some of which are more or less sympathetic with Kiki, and he does not seem to have a lot of sympathy right now with what happened with the jail, his takeover of the jail, which only lasted a few hours. And then you've got Julia Brown, who really seems to have a bee in her bonnet over this issue, and really seemed to be full of contempt and scorn for the sheriff, and even interrupted his I don't know if you saw this, but she came up and delivered this temporary restraining order to Kiki and just interrupted his news conference. It was kind of surreal, and basically said that's my only shot, and I had to take it, my only opportunity. So you've got this battle for control. Now, yesterday I had on Jess Williams. Jess Williams normally kind of above all of this stuff, seemed to have some irritation for the sheriff, and Ben Rawson clearly not a fan of what happened at the jail. So we've got a situation that's developing out there, but the main thing to remember is that Chris Barella was taken from his home at about 6:30 in the morning and was arrested. And this was with the blessing, apparently, of Mark D'Antonio, the district attorney. And he was then processed down in Lee County and was there. I don't know if he was there a day or whatever, but he finally got bonded out there on $35,000. And I assume that he's back in town. Somebody told me that he was back in town. And the claim is that he misused the prisoner's fund, although it has been pointed out to me that the charges technically are incorrect, that he's been charged with embezzlement of the prisoner's fund, and that it's actually in the details of the complaint, not embezzlement. Embezzlement is when you're given authority over something, and then you not only misuse it, but you convert it to your private property. And so I don't believe that's the charge in this case. I believe it's probably would have been better filed as misappropriation if all these factors are true. And I don't have I wasn't there, that's my kind of take on it. I'm just kind of soaking in the what the various camps are telling me, to a certain extent off the record, and they have to be off the record, but I can pass on to you different snippets. But it is a situation where, and then I read the law on this, which was 33.3.1. If memory serves, and see if I can go back and find that right now for you. And which is called Common Jails Operation by Sheriff, NMSA, New Mexico Statutes Annotated. And here's how it starts. And the title is Common Jails Operation by Sheriff, Common Jail Administrator, or Independent Contractor. The common jails shall be under the control of the respective sheriffs, independent contractors, or jail administrators hired by the Board of County Commissioners. All right. So, and not trying to stick a thumb in the eye, of course, of the county commissioners, Jess Williams, Julia Brown, that side of the aisle, the county attorney. But it seems to me that you could quite easily read this as it states, the common jail shall be under the control of the respective sheriffs, that the sheriff does have a statutory claim to be able to run the jail. Now, having said that, there is some law, or not really a law, but I think an agreement that comes out of 1989 in which it was agreed that the county commission would be over the jail. Now, to what degree that's considered law as opposed to just a statement of policy, you can argue that. And also whether that could be challenged by a sheriff. That's what's at stake here, what's going on. And I just said, if I was the attorney for the sheriff, that's how I'd argue it, is that we can clear this whole thing up by saying the first call of authority over the jails is the sheriff. But that doesn't mean that it's going to end. That's not going to end the argument, because you've got a long history of the county commission being over the jail. And that's, practice. People want to know, how the law works and everything. And, obviously we've all had friends that have been in, or we ourselves have been in the criminal process or the civil process. The law is not always cut and dried. For example, I just state this, it doesn't matter as much what a law says as it matters how it is interpreted and has been interpreted historically. And there's the doctrine in the law, stare decisis, let the precedent rule. So the way that things have been interpreted in the past, and that's dealing with case law, but it's also how statutes are interpreted. So bear that in mind, that the statement of the statute is just going to be, one, just going to be one factor here in this debate. Now, the Sun News says court sets Barella's first hearing December the 24th. So Barella's going to be processed here beginning on the 24th, and I'd kind of wondering who his attorney is. And you've got this hearing in front of Judge Arrieta. On the 18th about this. And I've got a little bit of gear for you from KVIA, which I'll play momentarily, but it is kind of interesting. And if you pay attention, you will be able to see a little bit better how these bodies interact with one another. And, you can decide who's on the right side. I think that, Kiki has a beef with the county commission, especially Billy Garrett. And that's kind of where this starts. And we know that he's got a beef because he's said it publicly, but he's also filed a lawsuit against Billy Garrett in the commission for taking away his First Amendment rights. And so Billy Garrett has investigated the sheriff and said there wasn't enough there to do anything about. So this is this kind of the struggle that starts out over the budget. Now, you could argue probably that if not for the way the budget played out, none of the rest of the stuff would be happening. But that, the other side's going to argue that doesn't absolve Kiki of his decisions. Anyway, here's a little clip from KVIA. It's an ongoing situation where Chris Barella, the jail warden, basically was arrested and is suspended from his job. Kiki V. Hill at the sheriff's office came in with his men, and apparently at some point a SWAT team came in to secure the area, and they were running the jail for a couple of hours. And then the county attorney, Nelson Gooden, and Julia Brown, county manager, and with some input from the board, et cetera, file emergency request for a TRO, temporary restraining order, which Judge Arrieta granted the same day. And so Kiki's men were asked to step away from the jail, and then Ms. Hooser took over. So that's where we're at right now. And Chris Barella is getting prosecuted starting on the 24th. Mark D'Antonio is in the Kiki camp, and the rest are opposed. Here's a clip.
Doña Ana County leadership. Who's really running the jail now that its director is facing criminal charges? Chris Barella is already out of jail, but he's not back on the job. He's on paid administrative leave. ABC 7 confirmed he posted bond last night in Lee County near Carlsbad. Barella was arrested yesterday morning on allegations he misused the inmate welfare money. The Doña Ana County jail administrator is charged with embezzlement over $20,000, fraud over $20,000, bringing a weapon into the jail, and willful neglect of duty.
Just back in August, Barella told ABC 7 he feels the sheriff is out to get him and wants to take over his jail. When Sheriff Kiki Vigil announced yesterday he had taken over the Doña Ana County Detention Center, the county manager served him legal papers telling him he was not in charge.
The premises of the detention center immediately.
I'm holding a press conference and she approaches me like this.
It was probably the only opportunity I would have to see him since he won't talk to me.
I had no option but to take over the custody of the jail to assure the operations.
I believe it was an illegal and inappropriate activity.
This order was obtained without even notifying me, nothing like that.
Since the story unfolded in front of our camera yesterday, ABC 7 Jose Obregon has learned a lot about the sheriff's jail takeover,
which was very short-lived. Josie is live in Las Cruces tonight with that new information.
Rick Estella, Captain Vicki Hoosier is now in charge and reports to County Manager Julia Brown. Brown says the sheriff's office has no legal grounds to take over the jail in the first place. Sheriff Beziel says he only did so yesterday temporarily to make sure the inmates weren't in danger.
I don't want to have any disruptions or any riots going on. This is just going to be a temporary. This was not going to be a permanent takeover of the jail like some people have been stating.
Vigil says he wanted to make sure order was maintained at the facility. That's because the allegations against Barella directly involve the inmates' welfare fund. Court documents say Barella misused funds for things like employee meals at meetings and gym equipment for inmates that was later donated to Barella's boxing gym. Vigil's claim is false, according to County Manager Julia Brown.
I don't believe that it was an emergency that they needed to arrest Mr. Barella and create an environment where that kind of activity could have taken place.
Barella's arrest has created an even bigger divide between the county and the sheriff's office. But Brown refutes that claim. She says the tension is stemming from other issues like the budget.
I don't think this particular issue is creating a divide. Unfortunately, there seemed to have been a rift long before this issue came to the fore.
But Sheriff Vigil says otherwise and believes Brown serving him a temporary restraining order at a news conference was only a publicity stunt. Brown says she went to the facility to ask Sheriff Vigil to leave. That's when she resorted to serving him while speaking.
It was very inappropriate of her to even come and serve me, a piece of process there in front while I'm holding the press conference. She could have waited until it was over.
Sheriff Vigil says he's hired a forensic auditor to look at the finances pertaining to the detention center. Brown is scheduled to be questioned. Live in Las Cruces with our New Mexico Mobile Newsroom, Josie Ortegon, ABC 7.
Wow. Well, when she delivered that process, it was like coming in for a slam dunk right in his face. I think it was embarrassing to Kiki, but I don't know that came off looking real good there. She had some attitude. And you might say, well, she got a right to have an attitude, but you know, it's it comes off better, in my opinion, with some professional demeanor instead of making it look like, within the county, you've got these different people that have approximately the same amount of authority. Kiki is going to argue, and there's probably some truth behind it. He's the top cop in the county, of course he is, but. anyway, it is an interesting development, and we're going to continue on with this. 6:21, I'll have some headlines for you, too, and some other news. You're listening to AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. That's 523-1450 on KOBE.
I bought a secret that I'll know if I can keep it.
Hey, it's Kelly. Who's this?
Quickly, Kelly, I think you need a heavy rotation of This Is Not America during these times.
Probably. How's it going, man?
Pretty good, man. Just wanted to let you know that before you fade out. I'm heading out. I'll talk to you later.
Thanks, Greg.
All right, buddy. Bye. Bye.
All right, so we've got this situation brewing in the county, and I'm sure if you wanted to ask people, there's a lot of people who would blame it on Kiki or blame it on Billy Garrett. Although Billy Garrett's name has not really come up during this, the argument's going to be, but for Billy Garrett doing this supplanting, this promising of funds and not delivering, Kiki wouldn't have been provoked into thinking that he had to act by himself on these things, that he couldn't trust the board, et cetera. I think that's somewhere at the bottom of it. And then other people are going to say, you know, he's taking it too far. But not really in defense of Billy Garrett, I think that his response to that would be, if Kiki had only waited, the funds that he was promised would have arrived. We couldn't give him the funds before we had them. So, I mean, you know, to a certain extent, it's a matter of perspective, but I guess the first round goes to Kiki. He removes Chris Barella. The second round goes to the county, the county commissioners, because they got him removed from the jail pretty fast. But we've got more hearings and such coming up, and there's the federal suit that's going to be against Billy Garrett. I do think that this has shined a lot of light on Billy Garrett and to a lesser extent Wayne Hancock in the way they make decisions. And it makes, I hate to say this, but it makes them look like they're running through the county commission a banana republic, in which the only thing that matters is what they want. It doesn't matter what the people vote for. And it's the classic elitist vision where the elites are trained. They're higher IQ people. They're better educated. They have pure intentions. And they're working for the future of civilization in Dona Ana County. And so they're doing these things. But, you know, the decision making is it's a little bit of a tyranny on the county commission in terms of representing what the people want and what they voted for. And so that has kind of ultimately, I think, backfired on Billy Garrett, because Kiki is obviously not the kind of guy that's going to take getting pushed around or misled, or however you want to characterize it. That's kind of how I see it. Now, I do have the warrant for arrest of Chris Barella, and I'll go through, it's a public document, but I'll go through that later at some point. But let's get to a few other topics here, because just as important nationally, internationally, Donald Trump, the debate going on. And you could, would you object 523-1450 if I was to say what's happening here in the county is happening at the national level? Obama is the Billy Garrett figure who's going to do things his own way. He's going to do them through leftist, ideology and beliefs and liberal beliefs. He's going to do things his way. If you disagree with him, you're lacking in intelligence or goodwill, or you might be criminally insane. That's the Billy Garrett figure. Don't criticize. Just stand back while we run things the way that Obama does things. And then the result, of course, is certain amount of chaos, or certainly dissatisfaction. And then the kiki figure here is Trump saying, we're going to, shut down these borders, not just with Mexico, but we're going to shut down the borders with Islam. Now, I was talking with a friend, and Pete's been on the show, and, I've had my personal battles with him over Obama. And, he is, famously, at least in my experience, called me up the day that Obama was got reelected and said, "I told you so." And I, in no certain terms, responded by telling him where to shove it. But, even Pete, who had at one point, it would seem to be an almost Jesus fixation with Obama, now says he's not a war president and we need to do something else. So anyway, I said to Pete, I said, "This is what I think that Trump is doing. He's doing the same thing that he did for immigration. We can now talk about immigration and sending people back, shutting down the borders, building walls, all of the stuff that the people on the right wanted to talk about, but they couldn't. It was a third rail topic. It couldn't be touched. All right. Now Trump brings up the Islam thing, the Muslim thing, and says, we're going to stop all of them. Now, in the same way that we're not going to deport 11 million people, Trump knows we're not going to stop all Muslims coming in, but he broaches the topic and there's a firestorm and he's intensely criticized as being a bigot and then begins to fade a little bit. People start talking about what, not just Trump, not just how big his cojones are, but they begin to talk about the topic itself and discuss it in a way he is making it okay to talk about the most important issues in America. And I would say, while it's kind of breathtakingly audacious, it is at the same time a type of leadership. You may not appreciate it, but the kind of leadership that's bringing up issues so they can be dealt with. I mean, clearly, if you read about the attack in Syria, or pardon me, the attack in Paris, you'll find at four or five of those people were either from Syria or they went to Syria to fight. And a couple of them came back supposedly broken by war. They were deeply disturbed by what they saw and they didn't want to be there, taking up peaceful lives, are the individuals that went out and killed hundreds of people. So the notion that we have to or would want to bring in tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of Syrians, it's insane. But because the posture the president took, the president always takes the posture that this is what I'm going to do because it's the right thing to do. And if you disagree with me, you're a bad person, you're stupid, you're uneducated, you're lacking in good intentions, you might be crazy. You have evil motive, an evil heart. That's not leadership. You know, that's something else. One of the things that a leader does is he or she foments or encourages discussion, so important topics can be talked about enough so that people can feel like the executive decision or the outcome wasn't just from the top, the people were involved with it, and it lets the pressure out of the topic enough so that people can, you know, we don't go to war over it. What this president does is inevitably claims to stand for the only true conclusion, and it's a very dangerous thing to do. It's very misguided, and it's not an act of leadership. 6:34, 6:35, Kelly O'Connell Show, and somebody called in and asked for This Is Not America, David Bowie, from the famous movie, one of my favorite movies, called The Falcon and the Snowman, based on a true story. And we're going to come back and talk about this a little bit more. I don't know what you find more interesting, Trump or Chris Borrella's situation, Kiki, but so we'll mix them both in. We'll be right back. All right, so, and I'm thinking about this. It's a gross exaggeration to compare Billy Garrett with Obama and Kiki with Trump, of course. But I'm trying to make an analogy for what I think is, Billy Garrett's a nice guy. He's been on the show before with his golden earring, of course. You run into a danger when you're operating from an ideology. I've said it before. I'll undoubtedly say it 1,000 more times again. Leftism takes the place of religion, and that's why people who are true leftists. And I'm not talking about Democrats listening to the show. Many people in this county are conservative Democrats, and they would be indistinguishable from Republicans from other parts of the country. Obviously, I'm not referring. It's not a Democrat issue. It's a leftist issue. It's a progressive socialist, whatever you want to call it. But it's a real danger to operate from socialism. Number one, because it's so thoroughly discredited in history. I am not aware of any countries that have been run on a socialist model that have any long-term success. And people will bring up the Netherlands and not Netherlands, but Sweden and Finland, such Norway. Those countries are not socialist across the board. And they're very small countries that had established economies when they kind of started getting into more social welfare. But if you want to look at the impact of socialism, look at the struggles that have occurred across Europe for the last few decades, the high rate of unemployment, which is totally unacceptable and is totally unnecessary. You don't have to have high rates of unemployment to have a successful country. The underperforming economies, the way that the EU created these welfare ghettos in Spain and, with all due respect, to Greece and places like that, where, you know, the unemployment rate in Spain has been it's from what I understand, almost 30%, and the same thing in Greece. You've got countries that are failed and they're not allowed to fail and, work on their problems because they're stuck in this, in the EU, which I lived in the EU and for years. And, there's some great things about Europe, but they weren't caused by the EU. You know, the EU is a late player. But anyway, you know, certainly Kiki is no Trump, but what I'm trying to get at is that I think it was this kernel of leftism, of progressivism that got stuck in Billy Garrett's mind that he's been laboring on. He's been working on it. And the same thing has happened, is still happening in the city. And it is, it's distracting. It's not really the American way of doing things. And it is, well, think about this. We're experiencing problems in the country and have been. And I would say that to a large extent, even though we've got the greatest economy in the world, the greatest economy the world has ever seen, we've got a lot of parasitic entities that are attached to it that are draining the vitality of it. And because of that, the economy doesn't rebound like it should. And so you've got, you've got more than 50% of the tax income or the spending. Obviously, spending outstrips tax income because of the fact that we're deficit spending, but more than 50% of that money is going towards social welfare. So Medicare, Medicaid, all these other things. It's not an investment. So you're not building up the country. You're not making the country more prosperous and stronger. What you're doing is supporting a certain number of people, some of which are truly desperate, miserable people that are handicapped or elderly, infirm, you know, widows and orphans and this stuff. But the rest of the people who could be working and are not, you are enabling them. You are, and anybody can lose their job and need a period of support. I don't have a beef with that. But people who are chronically involved in the welfare system are debased by it, and their families are debased by it, and their personhood is stripped away a little bit. Their dignity, their honor, and their resolve. And on top of that, you've got the economy not running robustly because so much money is being poured into something that you could not possibly call an investment. And so our country, the economy, if it were stripped away of a lot of these things, not all of them, you've got to have a safety net out there, but the economy would be so massive. And in the old statement by Ronald Reagan, a rising tide raises all boats, is true. Build up your tax revenues through a growing economy, a robust and healthy economy, not through ever-increasing tax revenues like we do around here. Kelly O'Connell, 645. We'll come back and talk about the Barella case a little bit more. All right, I've got another clip here for you from this developing and ongoing Chris Barella situation with Kiki and with the County Commission and Julia Brown. Here it is from KVIA, and this one's a little bit earlier than the last one. I do not hear any... Okay. Problem, I had the sound down on it. Here is that clip.
And I'm Stephanie Viet. We begin with breaking news out of Doniana County. The Sheriff's Office has taken control of the Doniana County Detention Center after jail administrator Chris Barella was arrested earlier this morning.
And the Sheriff, Kiki Vahil, gave the announcement during the County Commission meeting just a few hours ago. And ABC 7's Jamie Warren is live from our New Mexico Mobile Newsroom with the latest. Good afternoon, Jamie. Yeah, a huge announcement here earlier today during the County Commissioner's meeting. Leading Commissioner's stunned. Vahil announced that Barella was arrested
earlier this morning. Charges including embezzlement of over $20,000, bringing contraband into a jail, among other things. Vigil addressed the podium, addressing the commissioners here earlier today, telling them a critical incident happened today. According to Vigil, a white-collar crime unit arrested Brella at 6:30 this morning, saying charges stemmed from possible misuse of inmate welfare funds. It's still not known where Barella will be taken, but he's being transported somewhere outside the county. Vigil says his jail takeover is only temporary, but some commissioners were skeptical of his huge announcement.
I am empowered and invested as a conservator of peace for this county to take emergency precautions that in this instance include taking over the immediate command of the county detention center. As a matter of public safety and maintaining the security of the institution, I have authorized both the acquisition and lockdown of this facility.
I'm not prepared to turn over the detention center to somebody who walks in and says that he's in charge of everything. That's not generally the way things work here in America.
Vigil says more arrests are pending. Right now, Barella has a bond set at $35,000. We will continue keeping you updated on this developing story on air and online as we get more information. Reporting live from the County Government Center with our New Mexico Mobile Newsroom, Jamie Warren, ABC 7.
And the Las Cruces Police Department says the county jail has requested the assistance of police. But in a statement released this morning, LCPD says it will not get involved for now. The statement reads, quote, "We have declined assisting in this situation unless it becomes a public safety matter. We have also reached out to New Mexico State Police to let them know what's going on in case we need their assistance," end quote. And coming up in our next half.
All right, so that is what had happened earlier is Kiki had gone to the county commission and made his announcement, and then he made a press announcement later at the 4 o'clock press announcement that he was giving to continue on with the informing the public of what was going on. That's when Julia Brown came and served him with process. Which was, I mean, Kiki was saying that, well, she just did that as kind of a theatrical thing. She's involved in the case, so she's, you know, she can't really deliver the process. But it was, she did make her point. She totally ruined the press conference. Anyway, let's take, I'm a little bit behind, 523-1450, but I'm a little bit behind on my breaks here myself, and we'll be right back. And from yesterday's paper about Chris Barella, his first appearance will be on December 24th, Christmas Eve. It's going to be in front of Conrad Perea in the county magistrate court. He was held in jail in Lee County for 3 hours. And posted a $35,000 surety bond, 10%, I'm sure, probably to the court. And so, go through this article for you, see if there's anything that's not out there. Accused of embezzling $20,000. So he was brought to Lovington, which is in southeastern New Mexico, and booked in Lee County, and he was booked in at 110, and then he was out by 4, I guess, and has returned to the area. And let's see what else is in here. And the criminal complaint is actually, which I've got a copy of, is online, and the paper has a connection to it. Now, they accused him of bringing in contraband, which was, I believe, an AR-15. And so I guess, you know, there's a defense for all of this stuff. The defense on the first thing would be he didn't embezzle anything because he used the money to buy stuff for the jail. So therefore there was no fraud. There may have been misuse of funds, which is a different charge. And then bringing contraband, he brought in the gun for his own safety or the safety of his crew, and it may or may not have had a permission, but that was not, you know, meant to break the law. And dereliction of duty, the answer to that is to just claim that he wasn't derelict, that he's, you know, all of these things are acceptable. So anyway, you've got a real, you know, it is a power struggle that has moved outside of the county commission meeting rooms and is now kind of playing out, and the lines are drawn. And you've got on one side the county commissioners and Julia Brown, county manager. You've got Nelson Gooden, the county attorney, on the one side. On the other side, you've got Kiki, and you have Mark D'Antonio. So anyway, we'll take a break here and come back. And if I don't get any more calls on this, I think I'm going to move on to other issues. 523-1450 Kelly O'Connell Show, 659. And we'll be back after a break on the hour.
Falcons
All right, so, you know, this is story is still a big deal in town, obviously, the Kiki V. Hill, the Chris Barella story, the county commission, everything. But we're not getting a lot of calls. I don't know if people are kind of bored or by it. Maybe there's not as much interest in the story as I thought there would be. But the story's not over. And in 8 days, there's going to be another hearing. We don't know if Chris Barella has a attorney. I'm trying to get Kiki to come on. Ben Rossin came on yesterday. Billy Garrett is always welcome here, of course. Although I don't think he's going to be showing up for the sake of the argument. Downtown Julia Brown is welcome to come on the show. Anybody who's involved in this who can, you know, shed a little bit more light. I know certain people can't come on because it's an ongoing investigation. But anyway, here's some of your headlines for you. Congress getting ready to vote on the right of Muslims to migrate. Do you agree with me that this issue with Donald Trump with the Muslims is similar to the other immigrant issue? In that he wanted to bring it up in a way that nobody could walk away from it, nobody not have an opinion to get people talking about it so that we could do something about it. In other words, here's the claim. The president has failed in this area of protecting us from radical Islam, or at least his approach is an approach that is going to cause a great deal of chaos and suffering in the future. And carries with it enormous danger. Now, the reason that I say that is that for whatever reason, and who knows, I mean, I think I understand where the president's coming from, but he tends to present himself as inscrutable, as beyond, you know, his thought processes are really beyond what the mortal could comprehend. And if he says that we need to bring in more and more Syrian refugees, we need to do it and just, you know, stop complaining and sit down and shut up. You know, that to me has enormous problems. I was doing some research and found that there's just a lot to say about that. There is a, and I've got this here from MSN, an article that I had picked up yesterday. Third attacker at Paris's Bataclan Music Hall identified. And a 23-year-old man from Eastern, a guy by the name of Faoud Mohammed Agad, A-G-G-A-D, from the French city of Strasbourg, identified as third gunman at the music hall shooting. He had, even though he was from Strasbourg, which is on the border, it's a border city, Faoud Mohammed Agad had traveled to war-torn Syria with his brother and a group of friends at the end of 2013. Two other attackers involved in the massacre of 90 concertgoers at the Bataclan, Omar Ismail Mostafi and 28-year-old Paris bus driver Sami Amemauer, had also been to Syria. and two of the gunmen blew themselves up with suicide belts packed with explosives after the killing spree. Third was shot by police. Most of the group of six men from Strasbourg who went to Syria with a guide were arrested. And, all right, so, okay, so what's my concern? My concern is probably obvious. This Syria is, it is a hotbed of not just civil war. You could have a civil war anywhere in the world. It's a hotbed of jihad, and it's a place that not only attracts jihadists to the holy war there, or what they consider to be the holy war, but it's drawing people into ISIS, and it's their one of their international bases is there. But in addition to that, it's creating jihadists. And so for us to bring in from a group of people, when the this is what I don't understand, why people are not more outraged at some of the decisions of the government. Why isn't there, and I think the answer is because we have not been trained or have not trained ourselves how to think logically and independently. If the government tells you something from the facts that you know already, can you assemble the argument in your mind and move it back and forth and take it in another direction? Do the facts presented by the government, for example, lead to the conclusion, as the president invariably does? The president draws a conclusion and suggests, if you study the facts, if you listen to the expert, that's the only conclusion that a rational person could draw. A rational person with good intentions, good heart, an American. And so we have failed to either instruct our children or ourselves how to think rationally, how to think logically, and therefore we're at the whim, we're at the mercy of the people that provide us with information, mainstream media. And it's probably somewhat true on the right. I think it's more true on the left. You know, the left's theory is tribal. You've got a bunch of different groups that have their interests, and they're going to join together with other people who are tribes who have their interests, and the interests might be radically different. You might have, for example, a group of women that are feminists and totally dedicated to every feminist virtue. You, on the other hand, could have a group of people that were involved in the pornographic industry. Now, they're interested in radical free speech. The feminists are interested in radically empowering women. There might be a total disagreement on many issues between these two groups, but they come together in the far left to advocate and work for power so that they can achieve their individual goals. That's what the left is a number of various tribes. On the right, you're supposed to have a group of people who are inspired to virtue, whether it be the virtue that you pick up from being a Bible follower, a Christian, a Jew, a Catholic, a Mormon, whatever. Or you're an independently minded person who has drawn the conclusion that the conservative vision is the correct one. But these are people that are kind of inspired by broad claims of virtue. But on both sides, you're lacking in people who've been trained to think for themselves. And so then we're given this information from the president, crisis in the Middle East. There are millions of refugees. The world is taking on these refugees. And as the lead democracy in the world, we're going to take our share. And the issue of whether it's dangerous is dealt with by the president by saying, oh, you're a bunch of crybabies afraid of five-year-olds and widows. And then we do some research and find 73% of the people coming over are men of fighting age. And we find out that many of these people are not from Syria at all. They're people from the Middle East, which has many failed societies over there, societies that do not sustain the health and prosperity, the artistic or the intellectual interests, the religious ambitions of their people. And so because these states are failed and they have underperforming economies, because most of them are built on a socialist model, they want to relocate. And now some of them are relocating for themselves just to better their families or situations. They want to live a happy, prosperous, peaceful life. But some of the other people that are coming over don't want that. They want the exact opposite. They do want to infiltrate. They do want to become jihadists. And for the president to totally dismiss that, and here's one of the things that Peggy Noonan has said about him, is that he's a person who does not even address the fear. He simply dismisses it. And you've got James Comey, the head of the FBI, saying we cannot process people without paperwork, people we don't know anything about. And if they come through the border, are you a jihadist? No. Were you fighting in the Civil War? No. Why did you come here? My house was blown up. Do you support a democracy? Whatever the questions are that they ask these people, could be lying and there'd be no way to find out. And so when you find out that 20% of the Syrian population supports jihad, naturally supports it, and then you find that there's a lot of people that have poured in there, tens of thousands from around the area and the world, to fight for jihad, Now the numbers go up. Now the percent of people that support jihad passively and actively go up. And you're going to tell me that America has to bring in 85,000 of these people next year, and the year after that, 100,000. And the average person would see this as some sort of a commitment to suicide, exposing vast areas of the United States to the possibility of suicide attacks or terrorist attacks. And they don't want, people see that as not only a bad thing, but as a government that's totally incompetent, because the government doesn't even waste any time trying to understand what their view is and what their values are. That the president is doing an experiment in finding his inner socialist, that he's just wanting to do things his way, and to the extent that you try to stop him, he's a bad person. All right, within this context, you've got someone who arises named Trump, who's a very canny guy, he's a very cagey guy, smart and everything. Who knows what his presidency would look like? I have no idea. I'm not advocating for him, but I can tell you why he's successful right now. He's growing in the polls, is because he brings up the hot, but he's the only person who's not afraid to bring up hot button topics, take a decisive stand on them, and then let the conversation begin. So in that sense, he's an enormously helpful person to bring up topics that have been sealed off basically by political correctness. All right, so we'll come back and talk about that a little bit more. And there's a lot of other stories out there I want to get to as well. And 718, Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450. That's 523-1450. Who's this?
Jerry. Hi, Kelly.
Hello, who's this? Who's this?
Jerry.
All right, here we go. Folks, we've got, it's 7:23, and we've got Jerry on the line. Yeah, go ahead, Jerry.
Have you read the Immigration and Naturalization Act? Okay.
I read it every night before I go to bed to get me sleepy.
Okay. General classes of aliens eligible to receive visas and ineligibility for admission and waivers to okay. I lost myself there.
Well, what's
inadmissibility.
What's your point though?
In section 12 212 that has in there terrorist acts, and it identifies people that cannot come in.
All right.
And in that, portion of it, it states in there that anybody who has, and it's Section 3, Security and Related Grounds, paragraph B, terrorist activities.
Hey, Jerry, forget the subpoints. Just make the it just state what it says.
Okay. A member of a terrorist organization described in subsections 1, 2, and 3 clauses. Okay, that's part of it. And also endorses or supports terrorist activity
As
persuaded to other endorses.
All right, so that's an issue. I mean, okay, so you put a little bit of meat on the bone there. If there are people that are being brought into the country, they cannot be of the belief set that would allow them to. So I assume that everybody agrees no terrorists come into the country. Even the president would say immediately, of course not. But
yes, and
Jerry. It also, beyond that, though, bringing in people who theoretically are not involved in terrorism, but who support jihad, and 20% of the Syrians, according to the polling that was done before all of this stuff in Paris happened, 20% of the people in Syria support jihad.
So we have a problem.
Well,
we
and so as the how are we going to deal with the problem? And I think that 90% of the problem here is getting ourselves to admit or accept the fact that there are people. You know, the world is not Walmart. The world is not America. The world is not a Las Cruces or El Paso or L.A. There are not only dangerous parts of the world, but there are parts of the world where people radically disagree with us. But because our culture is so universally present around the world through pop culture and our enormous influence, people in this country can't imagine anyone disagreeing with them.
Right. And Jimmy Carter did this back in 1979 when we had the Iran hostage crisis.
He did what? Be specific, Jerry, please.
He shipped out Iranians. He stopped them from coming in using that law and actually told Iranians to report in, and then he shipped them out back to Iran. He did de-imported them.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, thanks for the call. All right. So folks, all right. So here's the thing. I think I'm not reluctant to criticize Trump. There's a lot of things he can be criticized for, but I think in criticizing him, we're missing not only the point, but an opportunity. The point is that there's a problem with Islam in this world, in this country. Now, you can spend all day arguing like the president does about what's the real definition of Islam. I'm not sure how helpful that is if you have a large number of people who claim to be Muslim and claim to be the most careful interpreters of Islam, ISIS or Al-Qaeda, whatever. If you have a large number of these people who claim to be motivated and following Islam, is the president really enough of an authority to tell them that they're wrong? They don't know what they're talking about. So in the president's mind, he's defining Islam as only positive. It's just peaceful. It's just, what is the president up to on that? But set that aside and get down to it. There's a problem with Islam. Now, what percentage is the problem in Islam? And I've got a poll that I was bringing up that, the next day, Trump had a bunch of polling too. And so I kind of put my polling aside. But there's a website, something like the Religion of Peace or whatever it is. And in there's hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands of different polls are. Okay, here it is. It's the website is called the Religion of Peace, and the Muslim opinion poll is the claim is that there's a tiny minority of Muslims who support anything like jihad. All right, here's just 20% of British Muslims sympathize with terrorist bombers. 1 in 4 British say the 7/7 bombings were justified. 31% of Turks support suicide attacks against Westerners in Iraq. 1/3 of Palestinians support the slaughters of a Jewish family, including the children. 61% of Egyptians approve a tax on Americans, 32% of Indonesians approve a tax on Americans, 41% of Pakistanis, 38% of Moroccans, 83% of Palestinians, 62% of Jordanians, 42% of Turks. All right, so if you take these people in, and this is just a question, I'm not saying that I have the answer, but if you take these same group of people with these high percentages of support for attacking America to live in America, what's going to happen? Now, you can claim, as I'm sure the president might, that as soon as they get here, they're going to see how beautiful our ways are and how we've been lied, you know, people have lied about us, countries have lied about us. And the upshot is that these people are going to get converted. But were these people in California converted? This guy that grew up in America, he had been studying to do this attack for 2 years, and he met his wife and they got married and had a baby. And before they had the baby, why did they have a baby if they're planning on dying in a suicide run? You know, it's just this kind of stuff that is just so puzzling. But anyway, the topic has been raised, and we're in the midst of a, you know, we live in a pluralistic nation. We accept within reason all beliefs, all religions, all worldviews. But is there a time when we've got to take a more nuanced approach? I would say yes, now is the time. What is the nuanced approach? I don't know. I don't claim to know. I'm not a proxy for Donald Trump, but I do know that the reason that he's going up in the polls because of the fact that people, a vast majority of people, in my opinion, are very nervous about Islam. They don't understand the religion. They cannot fathom why they're so violent in some of these places and why they seem to be able to accept the idea of killing themselves as long as they can kill somebody else so casually. And they are extremely nervous about bringing in a bunch of people from a civil war zone that is a jihad area, and are totally baffled why the president just kind of blithely and with just almost just with a laugh said, bring as many on in as we can. They don't have faith in the president. They see him as a either have been having incompetence or bad motivations, and they're looking for leadership. And Trump comes up and says, we're going to stop all of these people coming in until, and you got to be fair to the guy, until we get this process for checking him. And he goes back and says, of course, I didn't mean people that are citizens here or people who live here already, people who are visiting, people who are trying to emigrate. This has to be stopped until we can fix the immigration process. Who in their right mind would disagree with that? Maybe he presented it inartfully, but anyway, 732 Kelly O'Connell. And we'll be back to pick this up again. And there's something that is deeply disturbing to me. They're taking in Muslims here, but they're sending back Christians. I don't get it. This country arose from Christian roots. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450, 523-1450. Besides the fact, if we're going to help people that are getting killed, that are in danger, why not help Christians as well as Muslims?
A little piece of you, a little piece in me, will die for the sins of America.
All right. So there is some sort of a rule out there, just to, since I just mentioned this topic, that, but I was very not surprised, but I was disheartened when I heard that there are Christian people, even people that we have helped or encountered in the Middle East, that we're not helping to move over here because they're not in the middle of a war. They're getting hunted down by ISIS and having their heads cut off, but they're not in Syria. So, I mean, here's an argument. I talked to somebody the other day about whether Obama was a Christian. Do I believe that he's a Christian? I don't know what he believes inside. He might be confused. He might be. Here's the things that have been thrown out towards me. He's an atheist. He's a Muslim. He's a Marxist. He's a Christian. He's some sort of a combination of all those things. Do I believe he's a Christian? I don't, because simply because he doesn't seem to be interested in the topic. People that are Christians, that are sincere Christians, think about Christianity. They think about the Bible, blah, blah, blah. He doesn't seem to have that interest. Further, he doesn't seem to work on things that have a kind of a Christian orientation. You might say, well, we have a separation of church and state. Well, if we have a separation of church and state, why can't this guy keep Islam off his lips? You know? All right, here's a little clip from Huckabee on this.
Governor Mike Huckabee wants to be our next president. Governor, how's your knee?
It's getting better each day, you know, but it's been a real joy to have to campaign and have a little knee surgery, but nothing significant or serious, and I'm motoring along.
Well, we're going to talk about some significant and serious things. In fact, we have a Fox News alert right now. The rising threat from ISIS was in the president's daily briefing a year before they swept through Iraq in 2014. This has been confirmed by Fox News. So in other words, when the president said ISIS was contained, he knew it was not.
Well, everybody in the entire national security apparatus knew that it wasn't contained. 9 hours after he made that speech saying it was contained, we had the Paris massacre. So whether he called it the JB team, we had it contained. This administration has consistently misread the very obvious signs of radical Islamic jihadism. And it's just unfortunate that we continue to see more waves of this. But even last night in his speech, he could not bring himself to recognize that we are at war with radical Islam, not with Islam, but radical Islam. And we've got to start understanding that.
We have some sound for anyone who missed it last night. This is the president saying just that.
We cannot turn against one another by letting this fight be defined as a war between America and Islam. That, too, is what groups like ISIL want. ISIL does not speak for Islam. They are thugs and killers, part of a cult of death.
What does this signify to you? I'm not a person who believes you should get credit for saying something that you should have said a long time ago. So saying that we are at war with terrorists, that's obvious. And it took too long, some say, for the president to say that. Now that he won't make this move, what does that signify to you?
It sounds to me that the president is more interested in protecting the reputation of Islam than he is in protecting the American people from our very clear threat.
Why would that be?
Steve, it's the most inexplicable thing for a president of the United States not to want to identify. Today is Pearl Harbor Day. Can you imagine FDR going before Congress and saying, we were attacked yesterday in Pearl Harbor? I really don't want to talk about who did it, but, you know, we just want to say there were terrible people and they were thugs. Well, who was it, Mr. President? Well, we don't want to get into, because I don't want you to have any.
It was the Japanese. Just say the Japanese. Right.
And he did say that. That's the point. Identify your enemy, target your enemy, take your enemy out, stand for freedom.
Governor, this is what's driving a lot of the American people crazy, because I'm on this book tour. I'm able to go to 16 cities in the last 4 weeks, and you'd go to more cities than I could ever imagine. First off, so we find out before the invasion in 2014, the president knew about ISIS. He got in his report. Either he's not reading the brief or lying to us. Then we find out his own report by the commission, by the DIA, CIA, and NSA predicted the spread of worldwide. This will spread worldwide and grow in numbers unless it suffers serious losses of territory in the battlefield in Iraq and Syria. And the president tells us we're not going to put troops on the ground. We're going to allow that then to go worldwide.
If you have a malignant tumor in your body and you do nothing to eradicate that tumor, it begins to metastasize, grow, and kill you. ISIS is a malignant tumor. I've been saying this for years. And if it's allowed to go unchecked, if you don't go in and kill it, destroy it, not just contain it, destroy it. It will continue to grow, metastasize, and kill us.
I think Americans felt last night, I mean, just watching that, I got the feeling, and I speak as a mom, I'm thinking, wait a second, this, you're telling me, well, just trust me, this will eventually work. I'm not going to do anything different, despite the recent attacks on our own soil, to say the least. It made me feel as though this maybe one day this will work theory is not to be trusted.
One of the most important jobs a president can do is to reassure the American people that every effort is being made to protect them. But you have to have some credibility in saying that. We didn't see that last night. We once again heard the same old rinse and repeat. Let's have some more gun control because that ought to fix it. That ought to take care of everything. Let's put people on the no-fly list and not let them buy guns. Look, there are people on the no-fly list. For example, Ted Kennedy was on the no-fly list for quite some time.
So is that Ted Kennedy should have been on the no-fly list. Anyway, we'll take a break here and come back. And now, a couple of different people have stated we can take out ISIS with nuclear weapons. Putin and maybe it was Trump. What do you think about that? Let's discuss that when we come back. 7:42, Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450. That's 523-1450. And here I've got a little clip explaining what's going on with the Chaldean Christians. I think this is Rush Limbaugh. I think he calls them the Chaldeans, but I think it's Chaldean. Anyway, from Iraq.
37 Iraqi Christians being detained at the Otay Mesa detention facility are set to be deported in coming weeks, according to ICE. Immigration judge ordered their removal in the last 2 weeks. She declined to provide specific information about why the immigrants are being deported. They're Iraqi Christians. Chaldeans is what they're known as. 12 Iraqi Chaldean Christians who fled ISIS are going to be deported. The Hill.com story, just closed loop on this, it's from January of this year. And it's even more true today than when it was written. January 7th of this year, this regime not permitting Christians from Syria among the refugees. It's even worse today than when that story was written. Meanwhile, Trump says we've got to stop the immigration of Muslims for a while. We've got a handle on this. And you have seen conniption fit that's taken place.
All right, so here's the question. There's no doubt that that our country was built on it arose out of a Christian part of the world, which was Europe. Europe is the place that Christianity grew, was, you know, established and grew. We are an offshoot of that. We have rules and standards that are out of this development, and now. Are we supposed to bring in millions of people that totally disagree with that? Why? We've got a call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Good morning. This is Abigail.
Hi, Abigail. What's up?
I was just thinking about what you're talking about, and I can't remember where exactly I heard it, but somebody was stating that the argument for why they weren't letting the Christians stay was because they're fleeing ISIS, and they're not a state or a country or whatever.
Right, exactly.
Yet the Muslims are. And I thought, it's just so odd. You know, we have millions of illegals in our country that were saying, well, you know, they're already here. Just let them stay. So I don't know. Kind of see it as you know.
Well, I mean, it's just, my main goal in playing that, number one, is to show that the president doesn't have any special affinity for Christianity. It's just another group of people out there to him. Number one. And number two, if we're a Christian country, why would we choose to bring in tens of millions of people that are totally opposed to our beliefs and leave the ones that agree with us over there? I mean, if they're all under the threat of this thing.
$30 million question.
Well, it's probably got a 10-cent answer. Anything else, Abigail?
That's it. Thanks
a lot. All right. Bye-bye. Ultimately, even the – and we've got another call, but even the people that are most radically supporting the president run out of answers. That's what I've noticed. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Yes, this is Edward. How are you doing, Kelly?
Good morning, Edward. Hope you're well. I'm fine. And what's on your mind?
Well, I was going to call you and tell you. Remember the other day I called you and I said I'd lived in, Muslim countries for over 15 years.
Where was it?
And, and what I was going to tell you.
Edward, where did you live?
The religion of Israel back in the Middle East. And
this is what happens when you don't listen.
Is made out of two things that they never talk about. And I grew there, so I saw it. One is halal, the word halal, and one is the word haram.
Yeah, haram is against the rules. Where did you grow up?
Well, I grew up in the Middle East.
I understand that, but people would just be kind of curious. It would help, it's a little bit more interesting to know which country are you.
Well, it was in Iran.
Okay, all right, so go ahead.
There's two things. One is Sunni and Shia. There's two different, even among Muslims, there's two.
Yes.
Two. And they don't even like each other. They hate each other. And
yeah,
there's the main thing in the Islam is halal and haram.
Yeah.
You can ask any Muslim, which they never talk about. Halal means blessed kosher. Yes. And the word halal is big thing when you go to any Muslim country.
Mm-hmm.
And Haram means it's nasty and it's non-blessed.
Exactly. Well, the people in this country, because we have so much liberty, anything that's not against the law, we can do. And in Islam is inverts that. Islam has rules for what you're allowed to do and what you're not allowed to do. And so the amount of liberty in Islam is shrunk way down.
Yes, and when you go, anybody who thinks the Muslims, they're good people. There's good and bad again in every religion.
Of course.
But if you go to any Muslim country, first of all, anything the Christians or Jews or anybody non-Muslim touches, they're right there. That is the word haram.
That's, right.
You're a haram. And, if you go there to visit, you cannot do certain things because if you touch their stuff or go to the places they are. But you're, because you're an outsider, so right there, you're a haram. So that's why I don't understand. Why are we bringing them over here? Because if you're, as a Christian, if you traveled in their country, they have some areas that they are very radical and some areas they're more relaxed in the bigger cities. So once you travel, you have to have your cover with you. You have to do everything with you because you have to be prepared. Because if you go through the little towns, like you're traveling from one city to another major city, you're going to go through the little cities. And if you don't have your cover as a woman, or if you don't, if they have like their Easter on their religion, they have their Easter where the imam was killed, the Muhammad.
Yeah.
You go in the street and you wear white collar, you'll be attacked.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of crazy rules.
The people don't know these things. How are these people going to come here and adapt? Because me as a Christian walking around, I don't want to wear black on that the Ramadan.
Well, okay, so Edward, hold on a second. People would be interested to find out that there are certain rules and prescriptions for people that are not Muslim. And for hold on a second, Edward.
All right, folks,
when you call in, I try to have a conversation. Please cooperate.
And
there,
when you're
Edward,
born, your name has to be a Muslim.
Edward.
Why is the president's name has
all right,
a,
folks,
a
so
name?
I'm running out of time, so I'll cut Edward off. Edward, please call back. I'm running out of time, but this is a very interesting conversation, and I really appreciate you calling in. Folks, when you call in, work with me. All right, we'll take a little break here, and we'll just have a few minutes when we come back. Thank you.
Brownsville.
All right. Now, on the Republican side, you had Dick Cheney, you got Paul Ryan, Speaker of the House, and a bevy of other people. Your competitors, okay, we know they're going to come after you. But people who don't have a dog in the fight, like Cheney, they're all saying that this is an extremist point of view. You're going to alienate the Muslim world. That's going to come back to hurt America. How do you react to a guy like Cheney?
Excuse me, extremist point of view. I was against the war in Iraq in 2003.
People who don't have a dog in the fight, like Cheney, they're all saying that. The people who don't have a dog in competitors, okay.
All right, 7:56, just about done here. But would Edward, that was a good call from Edward. Iran is Persian, and there are various kingdoms that are in Islam. There's the Turkish kingdom and the Persian kingdom and all this. But the Turkish Ottoman Empire that have been kind of absorbed into Islam. But remember, if you're in an Islamic country, there are rules for you. There's not just rules for being an outsider, but for being a non-Muslim. And, one of the interesting rules is, for instance, if you're in Saudi Arabia, you need permission to travel from written permission to travel from one city to another. Imagine that. All right. So here is Trump responding to Dick Cheney. Check this out. This is brilliant. This is a brilliant response.
We know they're going to come after you. But people who don't have a dog in the fight, like Cheney, they're all saying that this is an extremist point of view. You're going to alienate the Muslim world. That's going to come back to hurt America. How do you react to a guy like Cheney?
Excuse me, extremist point of view. I was against the war in Iraq in 2003, 2004.
Let's keep it here.
Don't do it.
Let's keep it
here. Wait a minute. Cheney's the one that started the war in Iraq. You talk about an extremist. I mean, Cheney started the war in Iraq, which should have never been started, because as I said then, and I say now, you will destabilize the Middle East. Somebody calls me an extremist. I am not an extremist. I'm the opposite. I'm somebody that understands what's going on.
All right, so I thought that was a brilliant comeback. Dick Cheney doesn't have any right to point fingers at anybody. If not for, I hate to say it, Cheney and George W., we probably wouldn't be dealing with a lot of these things. Now, hindsight's 20/20, but for Dick Cheney to claim, Dick Cheney is like one of the most excessive people in the history of American politics, who these people, these neocons, they didn't listen to any criticism. They just, if you disagreed with them, you didn't know what was going on. Anyway, thanks for tuning in. I appreciate the calls and worked our way through a little bit the sheriff jailer situation. And also, we're going to try to get Kiki on the show and anybody else who wants to come on and talk about it. Islam. We got to do something to protect ourselves, right? Well, we'll talk about that a little bit tomorrow. Have a great day. Thanks for tuning in to AM Las Cruces 1450 KOBE, Kelly O'Connell Show, 523-1450 for tomorrow. Write it down. Have a great day. See you back in 22 hours. Ciao.